I'm freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
Oh, what have we here?
Go fuck yourself. And I am a sports entertainer.
Ladies and gentlemen, Henbies, this is the ESC Podcast, your weekly AEW review and breakdown. I am your host, Bane Duke, also known as the Duke of Derps, also known as the Skibbity Bop. But yeah, so, I mean, that being said, though, I think Daredevil Born Again, we just got done watching that, right? And we'll talk about that tomorrow. But I don't know about you, after watching that episode, I'm actually in, like, a way better mood. Not that I was in a bad mood, but, like, I feel like I'm ready to talk some shit right now. I don't know about you.
I don't even know who I am.
Indeed.
Who is your co-host? You haven't even said his name.
I mean, you know, I was going to get there, but, you know, yeah.
Again!
Yeah. Anyway, so that being said, let's get into wrestling. All right. It's fucking Charlie. I mean, come on, man. You know I'm going to get to you eventually.
Yeah. Another good week. Another fun time. I'm with you. That finale had me a little hyped, and now
we're
here.
I kind of wish, no offense to the wrestling fans, I do wish we were talking about Daredevil a little bit, because I feel like it was good enough that we could have, but schedules, conflict, blah, blah, blah. So, and that being said, because of that nature of the scheduling kind of being a little all over the place, got a lot of stuff going on, people, responsibilities, so on, so forth. So this is going to be a bit of a truncated episode, if you will. There will be a bit less on the reviews, probably. I mean, there'll still be stuff to talk about, but...
if you see the episode length, I promise you, it didn't get cut off early. It's just... We haven't done this in like...
30-minute section.
Yeah. I was like, we haven't done this in like 7 or 8 months, but yeah, it happens. It's just the way it is this week.
A lot of condensed times because there's just not a lot of content, but this week it's... Really, there's content, but like... It would be one of those things where, like, if there wasn't a lot, like, say, like, they just didn't have a lot of segments on each show, like, stuff went long, everything just went long, and that does happen sometimes, we might have to stretch a little bit more. Probably be the opposite in this case. We're probably going to stretch a little bit less, and so, if it feels a little short, I apologize, but that being said, we'll lead here first with our favorites, and,
yeah, I get the double trouble, I get the double fun this week, and... You know, last week we had some pretty fun matches, some pretty incredible segments, and we kind of teed this up on our, what the fuck was the pay-per-view? Dynasty? It was Dynasty. Well, the Dynasty review show, we kind of were talking about some stuff that happened this week. You guys knew this was going to be one of our favorites. Renee's interview with Hangman, Swerve, Willow, all of this, okay? She's backstage trying to get an update on Willow, what's happening. Swerve is bickering with Prince Nana. He ends up leaving. He tells Paquette, you know, no offense, I'm looking for your husband. Hangman walks in, gets in his face, says he's wasting his time. Security bolts in. He said he made a promise to Strickland he would never hold the title again. And Swerve says, let it go, man, let it go. And Hangman is screaming at him, you broke into his house. You burned it down. And he's like, you deserve this. And he just says, I know. And Hangman out of Page, his face just melts. He can't believe what he just heard. He takes this. He walks away. The Death Riders attack Swerve from behind. And glass gets involved.
Was it like a table or something? Like a glass coffee table?
Yeah, there was
some
glass container,
like
something. Yeah. But this moment of Swerve and Hangman, and what it ultimately set up on the pay-per-view, and what it's going to set up for the rest of the summer. This moment was so earned, and it was so beautiful. And for him to acknowledge this was unbelievable. And just, we talk about character development, whether it's television shows, whether it's pro wrestling, it doesn't matter. It's needed in every aspect. Because at the end of the day, this is a television show that's a weekly episodic television show. So...
And it can sometimes feel like, and this is no offense to AEW per se, but like it does feel like sometimes AEW's characters can sometimes be a little stagnant in terms of like they just don't develop enough. So when
there's only so much time on the block and not everyone 100%. Gets it. And when you get these opportunities to develop like this, and just the use of Renee here, having the personal connection with John, obviously being, you know, that's her husband.
Yeah.
I just thought this was a truly beautiful segment of two of AEW's best characters really reaching a new level that was further expanded upon at the pay-per-view. So, yeah, I had to shout that out this week as the favorite.
100%.
Yeah, any thoughts you had on that one? I feel like this isn't just a normal match. I feel like I gotta give you some love here on this one.
Oh, 100%. I mean, and I think it's indicative that either one of our favorites of either is a segment and not actually a match this week. And I will highlight a few things in a moment. One thing I just popped into my head while you were saying that, you brought up Renee. What I would love when John loses the title, or maybe when he's about to lose the title, because we haven't really seen her opinion of this whole thing other than a few times people have asked her, you know, but she usually doesn't give a straight answer, probably because she doesn't want to, you know, be definitive or anything, because that way she doesn't lock them into a certain type of story they have to tell, right? I'm assuming. I mean, they might have just told her to just be generic about it, you know?
Yeah.
I would love to hear what she thinks, because there's no way she's been okay with this. You could even work in, and I don't know if John would be comfortable with this, but, you know, because he had the drinking problem, you know, or the substance abuse problem. I don't know specifically what it was, you know what I mean? You know, like, I would love to see her be like, have you been doing this again? I know that would be insensitive to a lot of addicts probably out there, but like, I'm curious, would that be something they could play with? Like, maybe that's why he's acting so fucking lunatic, you know what I mean? Like, because he's just been doing things, you know, he's not supposed to.
Anakin, I don't even know who you are anymore.
I mean, I'm saying like that, you know, people love to make fun of Natalie Portman's performance in those movies, but I actually love that scene, you know what I mean? Like, because
yeah, it's
I think it's a brilliant, you know, all that overdramatic shit in the prequels, I fucking ate that shit up as a kid, you know what I mean? So, anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, like, I would love to see a moment like that. Maybe that's the thing that shocks John back into being John. Now, I don't think it would be an immediate thing, but it hasn't been with Hangman either, and we've gotten there. It never was with Swerve. God, can you imagine the Swerve that we had that was literally breaking into... Can you imagine a year on from that thinking that guy was going to be the babyface world champion? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, how do you get there? We can get there.
I know, right?
With John. I think, honestly, the babyface button for John Moxley is one that you could hit right now. I'm not saying while he's champion, but like after he loses the title. And people will be on board with it because they'd rather him be doing that and not be champion. Then I think it's just the combination of all the stuff right now. It's just not working for a lot of people, for some people, I should say, you know. So
yep.
So back to the actual segment here, because that's actually probably worth talking about, so that I don't get us too bogged down. Obviously all the dialogue between the two of them is great, and then I just wanted to note that what I wrote in my notes is that the Death Riders attacked him, set him to that table or whatever we called it, like the glass thing, and then they dragged his bone to the ring to drink the marrow. Recall the bomb on the glass. That's a pretty brutal ending to a show. Just the image of Swerve standing tall, you know, with the glass sticking straight out of his back.
It was great. Great
gory
stuff.
Brutal, you know, great stuff for your go-home show. So,
this week's favorite, wow, this was a fucking blast. The $400,000 eight-man tag where Will Ospreay, Kevin Knight, Speedball Mike Bailey, and Mark Briscoe defeat Ricochet, the Beast Mortos, and Crew, Leo Rush and Action Andretti. By the way, the promos that they had earlier in the night to set this up, fucking insane. That was one of Mark Briscoe's best. When he switches that tune, it works every time. Well, I'm actually thinking of diversifying my portfolio a little bit. It's like, this fucking guy is so good. This was... We love our party matches in AEW. Oh, buddy, you got one here. This was an absolute blast, thunder fuck, you name it. Everyone was getting down. This felt like we were watching Bola Weekend and PWG. Every single person in this got a moment to shine, and that is all you can really ask for in these things. I thought the chemistry that the tag teams had with each other was electric. The spot that's going viral was all four of the baby faces slapping Ricochet's bald head. And again, it just highlights how great Ricochet is.
Ricochet went from the Fed, where he was a comedy character, to being a comedy character at AEW. What the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. No, it would be true if he was a comedy character. He didn't have a character.
That's
just one of those things where...
That's giving them too much credit. You're right.
Ricochet is so fucking good at playing up the crowd, and it's just, he knows how to do it. He's got the crowd in the palm of his
fucking
hands.
You're right,
dance.
He wasn't a comedy, he was just a clown. I got them confused, you know.
Yeah, and he is so fucking good, and wow, Kevin Knight is taking advantage of every opportunity. I thought both back-to-back Dynamites, he was really, really good.
Let's say we're going to talk about him again, so, you know.
Yeah, he was so good, and oh, I really, really adored this match. Nice to see Crew getting involved.
Is Kevin Knight on that trajectory that, like, Leo Rush when he first came in, and Speedball's on right now, and Will Ospreay maybe initially had, but obviously Will Ospreay had the Will Ospreay boost, if you will, but, like,
so Kevin
is he on
Knight,
that trajectory right now?
He has an athletic ability that not many people have, right? I think his ceiling in terms of athleticism, I'm not saying he's this good in the ring, is Will Ospreay and Takeshita in terms of being an athlete. If he can utilize that, Bron Breakker, that's another good one, in terms of using his athleticism to just create big flashes in the ring. And we're seeing that on display. So, look, I think his ceiling's very, very high. Obviously, we know he's a good tag team wrestler, and these eight-man tags are only proving it. I love AEW going out of their way, signing these young blue-chip prospects, trained in the LA Dojo, featuring him on pay-per-views, featuring him on weekly TV. He's got a fun personality. He's got a fun presence, and he's good in the ring. He's very good. And yeah, maybe, I mean, because Leo was so good at being, you know, he was very athletic, but it was like a sly athleticism. Like he was trying to get under you almost like fucking Ant-Man fighting style. Right. That was kind of his way of using his height and weight to his advantage.
I guess I just more meant in the like, it wasn't like when Leo came in, we expected him to be like a main eventer, but like within a few weeks of Leo being there, we were like, oh, yeah, this guy's coming in with full everything. And it just didn't work out, obviously, with the timing. He didn't really like what Tony Khan had for him or whatever, obviously.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
maybe like, the hope for him is like Mariah May style.
That could be great.
We're just constantly featuring him with, you know, people that matter, like everyone in this match. They all matter. And eventually, he just gets that chance for a championship, maybe a world championship, and fucking runs with it. So yeah, this match was really, really good. So many great one-on-ones, and I really just wanted to shout this one out. This was a great one. So, Duke, hit us with your favorites from the back-to-back weeks that we had here.
100%, and well, we were just talking about Kevin Knight, and we're going to continue talking about Kevin Knight. I guess we're also just talking about Will Ospreay. So
yeah, you know, maybe they need to be a tag together.
It might need to be. I mean, they do complement each other nicely. I do think I would. I mean, I know it was just a one off, and they're supposed to not be friends, but like, I would still like to see them run it back with Kenny as his partner at some point. But I mean, I'm with you. I honestly Will might be one of those wrestlers that's so individually good that it really doesn't matter who you tag him with, as long as they're like not dog shit. It'll be good, you know, but I could be wrong. That being said, though, it was Will Ospreay and Kevin Knight taking on Blake Christian and Big Shoddy Lee Johnson. Super athletic.
Lee Johnson getting on our favorites. Come on.
I mean, it's not the first time. It was,
you
it's know,
been a long time, though.
He was stuck in Ring of Honor for a long time. So that was part of the problem. He was kind of invalidated from that. You know, if we were picking Ring of Honor favorites, I mean, it could have happened, but it never did. So, you know, like, I mean, I don't think it was ever within the rules that it could. But I mean, there could have been a match, I'm sure, that we could have broken the seal on that. But never happened. But that being said, yeah, I mean, there wasn't like a whole ton to talk about with this match itself, other than that obviously it was super high, you know, hard hitting and athletic. You know, Blake Christian is kind of tough right for him right now, because he's like clearly really good. They just aren't really giving him enough time to really do anything with that, which obviously isn't really going to help you a lot. You know what? I imagine this is helping his indie career, though. I'm sure he's getting paid more because he's being on AEW TV all the time. So
yeah, I mean, 4 appearances since March 26th, so maybe he's falling back into the fold.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I always liked him, so I would be definitely okay with that. Let me see. Oh, yeah, I made a joke about that. They were using the vision cone of the ref, if you know anything about stealth games. I thought it was pretty funny. That is basically what they did. There was a – I don't know if this was the second or the third fake Don Callis that got spotted here, but this was pretty fun.
It's please, so
more
good.
Of that. More of that. And if you're a fake Don Callis, bring an ESE sign so we know it's you. Anyway, I see fucking signs for like Fightful and fucking, you know, I see signs for like fucking wrestling shows that don't even need the help of advertising, basically, you know, like, and yet No ESE signs. I'm just saying, I know one of y'all motherfuckers have
been
in the show.
We're billionaires. We don't need that sign.
We're not billionaires.
Millionaires. Trillionaires. I'm Batman, Ed Boy.
Wait, if you're fucking Batman, where the goddamn podcast funds? Anyway, gotta start fucking paying you, Bruce. Goddamn.
Fast-paced match.
Yes, I would say that, you know, it's probably really great. This is probably better for for Lee and for Blake, I would say. Like, because Will and Kevin, I think, it's funny.
It was technically a competitive match. It was like 10 minutes.
That's true. I mean, I don't think I ever doubted that Will and Kevin were getting the win, though. So, you know, like,
no, yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like competitive, but like, and to me, honestly, when you know there's no chance of somebody winning, that's when I like it being competitive more. I know that sounds silly, but like, because I know in a lot of people's minds, oh, the only matches that should be competitive, right, are the ones where it matters, right? And it's like, shouldn't every match matter, though? Like a little bit? Like, you know, like, so, like, shouldn't there be able to be, like, a match every now and then that's not supposed to be competitive that goes 10 minutes and you're like, damn, Blake and Lee really put up a good fight. I hope I see them again. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. But yeah, so I'll move on from that match because it was good, but it wasn't like it's not going to be, there's not going to be as much to talk about like as with my actual favorite this week, which, is the opening segment of, Collision this week, which was, Dax and Cash FTR coming out to the ring, and they basically, you know, they're like, and this is something I noted, Charlie, when I was watching Dynamite this week. And I'll jump back to it on my notes. I'll bring it up when I talk about Dynamite, but I won't have to do this. So I won't have to be as specific about it. I just want to look for it really quickly. Where was it? So it was right after the 8-man tag. So it's actually kind of perfect because we just talked about this too. There was a segment where they cut to the commentary desk after they showed a flashback of the assault that FTR committed against Adam Copeland, Cope, at the pay-per-view and AEW Dynasty. And Shivani did not mince words. He was not happy with this. I immediately thought that's going to matter. Dax is not the kind of person that would let somebody go out and talk like that, even if it was for a storyline, unless he was going to respond. And respond he did, Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, I thought it was going to be Dax. Now they've been doing this thing, and I think it's because Dax is usually the one that'll like speak for them, you know, a lot of times. But Cash is also capable of cutting a promo. So what do they open up with, Charlie? They don't have Dax address it immediately. They open it up with Cash, and he's the one that brings it up, which I thought was interesting. You don't have to do that. And I'm betting they were sitting there drawing this up. If they even, you know, did any discussion about what they were going to say beforehand at all, you know, because different wrestlers do different things. And basically, when they come out, you know, Cash is like, I mean, you know, we did what we had to do. We're living legends, you know, and we're being forced because of Adam Copeland's selfishness to step back and not become tag team champions again.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I just want to point out the brilliance of FTR really quickly. Anyone who's been following their last few years in AEW since they re-signed, this has been the through line of theirs. There has been a continuous storyline with FTR going on in the background of their other storylines that is being addressed directly at the beginning of this promo that I just want to give credit to, because people talk about long-term storytelling a lot with AEW, but I don't think they realize the depth that it goes to sometimes. I think you could see it with like Hangman and Swerve, right? And when you have a moment that's so obvious, like we talked about, obviously you can't have no choice but be able to tell what's going on there. Similar stuff with FTR. This is now the second or third time when they have had a moment when they decided to help somebody else out, right? And in the end, realized they were fucking themselves and they needed to do something about that, and it ended up, you know, painting them as the bad guys in this instance. But like, you know, I don't know, it's just really interesting how that the motivation for FTR through and through, no matter what, is their legacy. And I just thought I'd give credit to that because it's cool. Yeah, so the through line here, obviously they call out Tony Schiavone for his comments. Dax asks him to step into the ring. Tony Schiavone is being pleaded with by Nigel. Please, come on, man, don't. They're going to kill you. What are you doing, man? You're losing your mind. And Nigel, by the way, in this segment was awesome. I just loved Nigel in this. Everything Nigel did in this was great, actually, you know? So he goes to the ring and, you know, the confrontation happens. They're threatening Shivani. They're about to attack him. Nigel hits the ring. Charlie.
Yeah.
Charlie.
Love this.
Charlie. First of all, I love Nigel defending his broadcast colleagues. That's something you don't rarely, you hardly ever see, because a lot of the older wrestlers that are doing commentary are usually too old. You know what I mean? I'm sure you could find footage of Jerry Lawler doing it or something, right? But I just love that that's a little unwritten rule of commentary. Is it the former wrestlers protect the non-wrestlers? You know, that's a cool little thing, you know? Charlie, Dax Harwood likes to wrestle singles matches. Are we getting Dax versus Nigel?
I'm in.
I'd so be down. He was game. You know what I mean? I love what Dax said when he got in front of me too. He said, "You just signed your death warrant." Fucking Dax just had me ready to run through a fucking wall in this one, bro. Oh, fucking Dax was great. And Charlie, I thought this segment was brilliant. I was like, God, what a great way to fucking, you know, open up the show. I wasn't really super excited about Collision this week because, you know, I was super behind on wrestling and just trying to catch up. And man, what a great opening segment. And then Charlie, it gets better because Daniel Garcia arrives. And in a mirror image to what happened with Cash a few weeks ago, he gets shoved to the ground. And the tensions have risen between FTR and 2.0 and Daniel Garcia. We thought they were boys. No longer.
That son of a bitch.
No longer, Charlie. And, I mean, you'll bring it up later, but they do go on to address this further on in the show, which I was surprised that we got that quickly back to it. I will save that for the section where we talk about it, because we're probably not going to spend too much time on it. What I will say, I was not expecting the Undisputed Boys to get involved. That was a step further than I was expecting, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but everything up until that point, I was super on board with this, and I do imagine the majority of this is going to be, you know, Danny and whoever he can get to fight with him, you know. I don't know who FTR would fight with in this instance. Like, as their third. So, but I would assume, or is it Danny and Adam? Because 2.0 just got murdered, right? So, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't know. And we'll see. I'll move on from this. So that was my favorite this week. Did you have any thoughts on that, Charlie, or on the other one that I brought up, either or?
Yeah, I thought you nailed it. Just good stuff. I really enjoyed Kevin Knight and Will as a tag. I thought they were perfectly, you know, I think AEW knows where his strengths are, and it's definitely his athletic ability. So, you know, pairing him up with Ospreay, if this is someone's first time ever watching AEW and they know who Will Ospreay is, right, because they've seen it online, and you see this guy tagging with him immediately, that just raised his stock in your eyes. So
there was a time when Will Ospreay was just moves, and that's not to say Kevin Knight is just moves, but there was a time when there wasn't that much to Will Ospreay besides what he did in the ring. I think Kevin Knight's in a similar position right now. There might be a little bit more to that than we realize, you know. So I mean,
oh yeah. No, and he can always show off his abilities. And then, yeah, FTR, this was brilliant. Just incredible opening segment. I saw someone once comment that it felt straight out of the territories. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty nice. The bullies crossed the line, you know? Made McGinnis to make the save and Danny Garcia and all that. Just everyone getting involved. Really good stuff. Really, really good stuff. So, yeah, let's jump into news here. We don't have much. We got a little bit of mail, too. And, yeah, let's get through this. Opening us up, a little bit of Sky Blue updates, you know, responding to her ankle injury. She just said healing an ankle is not easy, especially when it's completely disconnected from your leg. But hopefully soon, getting better and better every day. So,
all right, we gotta get an ankle doctor in the AEW, yeah. Figure out what the fuck's going on. Dante's was turned around. Sky Blue's popped out completely. We got something.
And it sounds like Pax got fucked up this question. Week, too.
Okay, this is a legit question, because this is a real thing. And I don't know shit about wrestling, but I do know they have to wear certain types of boots and shoes to do certain moves. I wonder if it's like an epidemic in AEW where people are just not, for the type of ring that they're wrestling in, wearing the right types of boots and shoes. Now, let me be clear. They're professionals. They know what they're capable of. And they also know what you would and you wouldn't do. So I'm not of any authority to speak up, but it's just a thought that goes into my head because, I've heard them say, if you kick somebody and you're not wearing the right kind of shoes, you could fucking hurt them and or hurt yourself. And if you're, you know, just doing, I would assume if you don't have the right kind of boots on or if you don't have them tightened up properly, I mean, it'd be really easy to roll an ankle or break one, you know? So like...
Oh, I'm sure. So,
I mean, think just jumping off the second rope or even the first. I mean, think about it. If me and you jumped off the first rope, we might roll an ankle straight up. We might not be able to land that. And that's not because we're unathletic. I mean, we are, but that's not the only reason. just your body. I mean, look at the Sid Vicious clip. You know what I mean? Like, that's the one. If you ever want to know what happens when you jump off the second rope that could fuck you up, that's right there. You know? Now, granted, that guy's legs were like twigs compared to the rest of his body, but look at his thighs. It should have been able to work out, you know? Anyway.
Yeah. So wishing the best for her, and I can't wait to see her when she gets back. So hope, she's awesome.
I just hope it's not like a thing, because that would be weird. No, I don't think so. They're professionals.
A little bit of glazing going on here. Will Ospreay was praising AEW coach Jerry Lynn, talking about how he's been a real guiding light. He's been working a lot with Jerry. He's been a guiding light and on how to make stuff a little bit more important for me in those matches. So I put a lot of love and admiration towards Jerry, as he's been a great help in my matches. So
I can feel that, yeah. Because it does feel like he doesn't, like, you know, and this is no offense to Kenny Omega, but Kenny Omega will do a thing where he hits 30 big triggers in a match sometimes. And I'll be honest with you, by 28, I'm like, all right, hit a different move, you know, like, so just being honest, you know, because I know the guy knows every move. So why 30 V triggers, you know, like, but I mean, that's more like old, like younger Kenny Omega that could like had the stamina to do 30 V triggers. You know what I mean? But like, whatever, you know, like, but you get my point. You can just do a lot of the same moves over and over again. And it's like, it can be a high spot almost, like, you know, you're just hitting finisher after finisher after finisher. But when they matter, and I've heard many wrestlers talk about this over the years, older wrestlers, it's one of the things I agree with. When you make a move matter, when nobody kicks out of it, and AEW has done a great job with that. I mean, they protect finishers, like, I mean, in a way that I've never really seen WWE do, you know? Outside of your various moves here and there, like your, what was the End of Days Forever wasn't kicked out of, right? You know, like, so... Yep. But it's like every move, every major finisher, it seems like, especially the super variants of those finishers, almost never get kicked out of, you know, like, so, so basically, I mean, I don't know, like, I lost my train of thought. What were we talking about again?
I don't even know. You're diatribing a little bit. I don't know. Something about the moves. Yeah. Anyways.
Oh, so yeah. Yeah. And I've noticed. So yeah, sorry. Cause the note was, sorry, because I knew where I was going now. So the whole thing was about how Will Ospreay's like, I mean, the implication I took from that is like, he's pulled back on doing every high spot you can in every match, basically. Probably. You know, like, and that's all I was getting at. You know, like, you can get lost in that a little bit sometimes, you know, and it doesn't make it not good. It can still be really entertaining. But when you save some of that for the bigger matches, it can just, and yeah, that's what I was saying. A lot of older wrestlers have talked about that. It's one of the few things that they'll say that I agree with. If we made some wrestlers pull it back a little bit more, not that we have to make them, but if we gave them that advice, it would probably help them a little bit, at least with the crowd reactions. Would it actually make their matches better? I mean, that's,
yes,
you know.
And there's a big difference in pulling it back and half-assing stuff. And you can definitely tell Will Ospreay is not half-assing. Chris Jericho's taking some time off. This was kind of predicted a few months ago, the Fozzy tour, this, that. So I believe it was made clear on Dynamite or Collision this week that, yeah, he's going to be gone for a little bit. Shelton Benjamin's contract length. He was talking to Donny DeSilva on the Huge Pop podcast. He said 3 years. So October 2027. AEW trademarked this, what the hell was it called? Summer Blockbuster trademark. Keep an eye out for that.
I guess that's going to be a TV episode.
Probably.
What?
And then we had some comments on our...
Wait. Imagine they do that the week of Superman.
Be awesome.
Oh.
Be fucking awesome. I hope they get fucking... David on the
show.
What
would be their
man.
Summer blockbuster for Warner Brothers? That would has to be it, right?
Yeah, I think so.
If they're planning on, because they've done shows that advertise Max. Or sorry,
you can
rather,
get
you
Superman
know.
On your fucking show. I would be. That'd be
oh,
so
like actually
cool.
David Korenswit shows up.
Yes,
oh,
if you can imagine the advertising,
dude, the synergy could be there. And they love AEW at Max so yes, much so that they'll advertise House of the Dragon on it and stuff. You know, so like, I mean. There might be something there, pal.
So we had a couple people write into us these past 2 weeks. Marcus wrote in. He said, another awesome episode, sickos. Keep slaying you guys. Oh, by the way, go fuck yourself. Son of a bitch. Thank you, Marcus. Thanks for writing in.
They finally did it, those sons of bitches.
Son of a bitch. You fucking guys. Marcus was also saying, I love this show. This is on our pay-per-view. They killed it, in my opinion, and I'll admit I'm happy. Moxley clutch with that win with the help and return of the Young Bucks. Keep slaying, y'all. Hashtag eat, sleep, elite. It's good to know that there were people excited about it, because I'm right there with you. I mean, it's been, you know, 8-9 days now, the excitement's only growing. We got the return of the fucking Young Bucks, man, in a big angle, and it mattered. And Swerve clearly is not going anywhere. I think there were so many people that night thinking, like, Swerve's gone. He's never going to touch the title again.
Oh, he's
gone.
Come on.
That was never the case. I think people have calmed down a little bit.
This is what we did. Swerve was going to be champion. I think there was even a chance he walked out with the belt that night. I think Tony Khan really probably didn't know. I mean, he probably knew, but he probably was, like, considering it even, right? You know, so here's the thing. And that's probably not just... I bet that's been every Jon Moxley title defense, just because there's such a great argument for so many of the people that have, you know, potentially won it. But anyway, I think what has happened is he's just been pushed off till later in this year. That's what's going to happen. Yeah. He's going to win it off whoever beats Mox, probably. Or maybe not that person, but maybe...
Or he might win it at Double or Nothing.
It's possible. Yeah.
Who knows?
You know, just the only things we know for sure is it's not happening at the next pay-per-view, right? And it's not happening because it probably wouldn't run that back-to-back. Well... No, probably not, right? You know?
No idea.
It really, we just know he's not getting it. We just know he's not getting the tournament shot because he was on the road to the shot when the tournament was starting. Yeah. So
he's not going to be the wild card next week.
Yeah, we just know he's not winning the Owen, basically. So, you know, well, I guess he could still be the wild card. I don't think that's going to happen.
That would get a little complicated.
That would be insane. I wouldn't be. Well, here's the thing. You say that it would get complicated. That is, I mean, AEW could logic that out in the way that, well, yeah, I mean, he'd be, you know, he would want to go for that shot. The problem is that match was made before his title shot. So that's a little weird, you know? So,
yeah, exactly.
But hey, you know, I mean, no, but that, yeah. So I think he's just been delayed. I think we all just were mad. And I think that shows how much we care about Swerve. So if anything, it should embolden you more to believe that. Because let's be honest, I think Swerve was planned to be a world champion eventually. I don't know
if he'll be a world champion this year.
Oh no. He's
going to win it again.
I'm saying at the time that he won it, I don't know if... Do you remember when we like first thought he might win it? The first shot that he got that he lost, right? And was that against MJF, maybe? I can't remember.
Revolution.
Yeah. So, and it was a great match, you know what I mean? But it just wasn't the time, you know what I mean? So, I think, you know, back then I started thinking, like, oh, I think he's going to win this soon. Which I wasn't thinking before. I thought in my head world champion one day. But even me and you were both at the time super surprised that he was on the track that fast, you know what I mean? And we thought probably he would win then, but he ended up winning later. I think that... then I don't know if that was the plan. I know that was probably the plan eventually, right? I could tell you that it just made sense, but was it at the time? I think he unlocked something through the crowd in a way that you can do in AEW that I think you can do in WWE sometimes now, but you have to really get the reaction over there, right? Because how big the crowd is. But in AEW, I think the intimacy allows somebody like Swerve to really connect with the crowd, and it'll open up the opportunity for him to become that main event guy that he knows and we know he could be, but not everybody else necessarily knew, or maybe they could see it, but they, you know, they didn't have proof of it yet. So, yeah, I don't know. I didn't mean to diatribe on that, but that, I was just thinking about that.
No,
I was
it's
like,
a good point. It's a great point. I mean, that's, you know, we love Swerve. That the AEW crowd in general loves Swerve. So it's going to be a little sensitive when, you know, he gets cheated. I mean, he essentially got cheated.
Since
so
Moxley's a heel right now, would we say Swerve is like the top babyface in AEW?
Oh, definitely. He is the top babyface.
Because if Moxley was a babyface, then we have to have a conversation, right? You know, like, because Moxley is AEW, right? But like, so it's kind of Swerve at this point, right?
Yeah. Yep. Even more than Kenny. And Kenny's active right now.
That's wild. And yes. Kenny is literally an EVP. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, and
so... We also had Andrew write into us on our pay-per-view show here. I wanted the pivot to Swerve, but if it wasn't going to happen, something insane needed to clinch the win for Mox, and it did. I was shocked that the Bucks returned to side with the Death Riders, and now I have to know what happens next. Andrew, I love that thought process. That is, we park our shuttlecraft in the same shuttle bay, my friend.
Indeed, indeed, indeed.
Indeed.
Wait a minute. That is,
I couldn't
Wait
agree
a minute.
More with
something just occurred to me, Charlie.
Yes.
There's a man we have not seen in AEW in a long time.
Uh-oh.
And Swerve Strickland is tag team partners with him.
Uh-oh.
And the Young Bucks are going to need to resolve this, them fucking over Swerve at some point. Is it time for the return of Swerve in our glory, Charlie?
How great would that be?
Now, I don't know if Keith Lee's available. I know he was long COVID, long-term out. We don't know.
In a perfect world, he is available.
Yes, in the perfect world where he's available, that's how I'd book that shit, man. Oh, that'd be so great. That's a pay-per-view match and a half. Come on.
No, but Andrew, I love your mindset here. I couldn't agree more. Like, if they're going to do something to pull the plug from the audience, right, and shock us, I'll always use this as the example. It can't be the Brock Lesnar, Kofi Kingston thing. It can't be that. You can't just go out there and crush our champion in 30 seconds for no fucking reason and then just move on. You have to give us a reason. Why did this happen?
You know who can come out and crush a champion in 30 seconds like it's nothing, Charlie? You know who it is. It's fucking Wardlow.
It is Wardlow, but Wardlow is on retirement this week, all right? He's on vacation, all right?
There is no Wardlow. Just a Wardlow in your mind.
But, yeah, so thanks again for writing into us, guys. We really appreciate
that. I am the Wardlow in your mind.
Wardlow! But yeah, now we're going to get to the kind of extra portion of today's show. And yes, it is going to be a little shorter than usual.
70 portions.
So don't expect us to dive too much into shit, but...
Are you saying that was my last diatribe? Are you taking them away?
They might be... we might be... revoked for
we traded them for a draft pick. God damn it.
All right, but that being said, it is still your show. I'll let you read off what happened on Dynamite.
It's not my show. What are it's you talking about?
2025 Dynamite is your show there.
Well, Dynamite,
buddy,
is my show, but I mean, this
you
is
take,
you know,
the fucking lead here, chief.
And tell me what to do. What if I left the show right now? What would you do? I just fucking left in the middle and said, I'm going to bed, fuck off.
I'm gonna hit the Ric Flair soundbite and call the police.
Officer, I need someone to read off 30 minutes of script for me. All right. Imagine if we scripted this show, how annoying it would be. Anyway. So we opened up this Dynamite this week. This diggity Dynamite, as I told in my notes. With Jean Moxley. He cut a promo to Sinister Music. Basically talking about the same thing he's been talking about, which is competition. I want more. No one wants the championship. We get it, John. Fucking get it. Anyway, speaking of John Moxley, he took on Katsuyori Shibata. I actually liked this match.
Yeah,
it was fine.
John Moxley's entire promos are just gaslighting the audience. That's all he does is gaslight. No one wants it. Swerve wants it, you son of a bitch.
That's true. You know what? That's actually, I would argue everybody.
Kind of that extra
hasn't
element
the storyline been that everyone wants to get this thing off this guy no matter what because he's been holding it hot? Isn't that literally the story? Nobody wants it, man.
He just likes gaslighting
him. What he's
him.
Really saying is nobody has it within them to beat him. She fucking gouged the eyes and set up a fucking choke. Okay, so John Moxley, and we're just going to roll past this here, but John Moxley choked out Katsuyori Shibata, which is not nothing, by the way.
No,
just
not
throwing
at all.
That out there.
Huge.
That
big win.
Called,
big win.
Called the wrestler, you know, like, I mean, he yep. cheated, but he's still called the wrestler, you know. But
he'll so, get yeah. his comeuppance.
100p. The ops might take the titles off them next week. Anyway, yep. I hope so. Anyway, so the Young Bucks, they did arrive and they explained what they did. I guess we could spend like a tiny bit of time on this, but not much. And basically said, yeah, they did it for their boy Hangman. He didn't want to, you know, he didn't want to ever have Swerve be champion again, and he didn't have the balls to do it himself, basically. So they did it, you know? Yeah, so Kenny arrives and, you know, I mean, this is a really good confrontation here. It's setting up a lot of potential stuff. So basically he's like, yeah, I could sit here and talk shit all night, but let's fucking fight, boys. And the Young Bucks are like, fine, we'll fucking fight. And then Charlie, he has to come along and ruin things. Fucking Kata, like Zuchiko Kata, you know, like coming down the ramp and saying, all right, Kenny, you may think that we're not having a match anytime soon because we're not, but we got to set up this match for All In, so I got to start coming after you now. Basically, you know what I mean? I've been on pause for 2 months, Kenny, but I'm coming for you now. You know,
literally.
Swerve come out to even the odds, and then we had the little respect, like fist bump between the former world champions. Swerve grabs a mic, says it's buck hunting season, and basically says he's gonna pull out a fucking shotgun and kill the EVP. That's literally what he said. I'm not. This is what he said. You know, he said he's gonna load up some buckshot, man. I think that's basically what he said, right? I think something like that. Anyway, and then what I think actually didn't really help the segment at all, Pac then attacks.
I mean, it really didn't help Pac.
Yeah, got injured.
Yeah, so tough for Pac. Yeah, Swerve Strickland took him on in a match. This is a little NXT Black and Gold like alumni match, which I like. You know, we love NXT Black and Gold here. But yeah, he appeared to be hurt. You got the two promos from the All-Star Exclusive 8-Man Tag guys. Hilarious stuff. When the best part of this was, I think they posted this on social media, the segment where the good guys said what they were going to do with their money. Fucking pretty funny. We had the Owen Hart Cup women's like promos. Like they had promos for all the people that were going to be in the matches and talking about potential upcoming matches in the tournament. Hangman Page is backstage attempting to be interviewed by Renee. Gets led, doesn't want to talk. Is looking for Swerve because I think he wanted to address what happened the week before. Well, actually, he really wanted to address what happened at the pay-per-view, but I think deep down Hangman wanted to continue that conversation, you know? Just my opinion. He then Nana is the only one there, so he tells him a message to send to him that wasn't like didn't mean anything. He was coming out there to for his own reasons. It wasn't saving Swerve. Love that. But, yeah, and then he tries to apologize to Hangman, him being Nana, and he's straight up shut down. He says, I don't want your apology. Because, like, let's be honest, Charlie, what's happened between these two, even if they come to an understanding, they're never going to be friends. They're never going to understand each other. They just come from two different worlds, you know, and have two different, completely different mindsets for how they achieve what they achieve, you know? And I think 100%. That's the cool thing about Hangman's heel run. Through all of that, he never really changed how he saw things or who he was as a person. He was just more willing to do sort of things we would view as morally gray, you know? Like, yeah. So we flash back to the Cope Assault. That's where the Shivani call out happened. Herzog arrived, made an official announcement. They were arriving to make an official announcement. They toasted to celebrate their championship defense. Max arrives. And like insulted people and made demands and then got shut down by Bobby. And then Shelton is the one that denies him from getting into the group on the vote. So a little bit of democracy on live television, you know, I guess it's helpful for people to see that nowadays in the world we're living in, you know. Renee interviewed Megan Bain and Penelope Ford. So they're going to bring the pain to an unworthy soul on Collision. They didn't say that, but that's what I put in my notes. And I was correct in my assumption. Thunder Rosa took on Chris Statlander in the Owen Hart Women's Tournament first round match. Great match here, Charlie. Everything in the Owen so far has been great, and these two, no exception. You know, that being said, she picks up the win Saturday Night with Fever, picks up the win with the Saturday Night Fever. Sorry, I reverse stuttered there. I thought I was saying it wrong at first, and I was actually saying it right. Anyway, Don Callis' family cut a promo. And basically they're saying this is going to be them in the finals. Don Callis wants success, so can't argue with them there.
And he's open to recruiting.
Yes. Oh, that was another thing. Yeah. But that's kind of always been true about Don Callis, right? I mean,
yeah, it's just with the injuries of Cage going down. And
that's true. Okay. Yeah. They're just saying it for right now. There's going to be someone that temporarily comes in. I mean, that's the unfortunate thing about the Don Callis family. It is a revolving door, and an injury is basically a year out, basically, you know? So I do think they will bring Brian Cage back just because that it's been working. But yeah, the Undisputed Boys were backstage talking about what they're going to do now that Adam's the champion, and the Paragon team name or Cole's new gimmick?
New team name. Undisputed Kingdom is only Taven and Bennett now. Paragon is these guys.
Understood. Okay. That's fine. They probably needed a new name since Taven and Bennett haven't been on TV in so long, you know. And if we're gonna bring them back, they should get to keep that gimmick because they don't have anything else going for them. No offense, just they don't right now. They'd have to come back with something new. So it's easier just to have that be if you're even gonna keep them. Taven and Bennett, I don't even know how long their contracts were, so we'll have to see if they're even around after next year, you know. So no offense to them, they haven't been getting used. So, and now that we got Roddy and Kyle both around at the same time. And everyone seems to be doing good. We'll have to see. All right, we got TV time with the Learning Tree, Chris Jericho. Called out Big Bill and Brian Keith. Was going to call them out on their shit for not being, you know, successful. And then Big Bill has finally had enough, Charlie. Called Jericho out on his bullshit. And in a turn that I wasn't expecting, Jericho actually said, no, you, I actually do care about you. You're the problem. So, and basically flips back around on them, says that he's not angry with them, he's just disappointed.
wrecked the TV with a bat in a very not mentally, you know, stable way, I'll put. That's the way I'll describe it. And then leaves. Basically says, figure it the fuck out. I'll be back. So no offense to Big Bill and Brian Keith. I don't think we're going to be seeing them until Jericho's back. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I just don't know. MJF was talking to MVP backstage. He's not happy with how things went at the Hurt Syndicate. Told him Max said his reputation preceded him. And says basically, and this is what I take away from this. They want him to do something that benefits them. And then he'll be in. Maybe. Which I'm like, didn't he kind of already do that? I mean, not that they needed that, but like he did try and do that. I'm thinking there's some sort of specific thing they want him to do. And I'm not sure what it is. I any thoughts? I don't have any idea. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
That's what I took from this. They want him to do business with them. I mean, unless he's literally just saying bribe us, which.
I mean, I saw a theory floating around, you know, because there was the Gates of Agony had a squash match on Collision.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Max can bring those guys in. There's a lot of people thinking they're going to reignite the Pinnacle, maybe just change up some members a little bit. I don't know.
I mean, hey, maybe.
Hey,
it means Wardlow will be back.
I think Max wanting to have these badasses have his back just fits in line very well with his character.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, MJF always wants to have, like, big muscle around so that he can, you know, not have to fight anybody if he doesn't want to. So, like, I mean, yeah. We'll have to see where that goes. Jericho left the arena in a tizzy, in a limo, I think it was, or some kind of vehicle, private vehicle of some kind. And then that takes us to the end because we have Claudio Castagnoli and Wheeler Yuta taking on Samoa Joe and Hook. Not like a barn burner here, but I like where this is going to go. I do think Hook's sell for the tag up was pretty good. I thought he did a good job of selling until Joe got in. Showed some really good resilience. Joe came in and popped off. Hit his fucking Uranagi on the outside. That was just like, Jesus fucking goddamn Joe.
So good.
Wheeler used a distraction of Mox coming out and like jumping up on the apron to gouge the eyes. Shibata then evened the odds a little bit, and Hook choked out Wheeler Yuta. And then Marina attacked from behind with a chair, which then I believe led to a giant brawl. I didn't write down what happened after that, but I'm assuming that's what happened. Like she beat him up, and then the rest of them, obviously not including Pac because he was injured, then attacked. My suspicion would be. Do you remember?
He just said they're acting more like the Dick Riders. That was it.
Yeah.
Joe and Shibata help Hook stand tall, and they stand tall to end the show.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's why I say Shibata even the odds. So I must have been, it must have just been that there was just, you know, Marina basically was pissed, you know? It was like, I'm going to attack with a chair because I'm woman and they won't attack me, you know? So, that'll take us to Collision, bud.
Yep. We've already talked about the opening segment with the FDR Town Hall, and we jumped into Tony Storm backstage pretty much saying, just talking about all the remaining women in the tournament, she'd be at Double or Nothing to watch the finals. Cool. We get a quarterfinal match between Jamie Hayter and Billy Starks, where Jamie takes on and defeats Billy. Look, this was a good showcase again for Starks, and she got some time in the match. It was a good match. And yeah, that's what with Jamie advanced. I think Jamie Statlander is the hardest match to predict in this tournament. Because I think no matter who wins, this is winning. So this is going to be very, very fun to see where that goes.
I know who I'm rooting for. Dut, 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 dut.
Yeah, buddy. Death Riders backstage. They expected casualties in this war, but never mourned them as duty only ends in death. It's so fucking metal, man. It's so metal. Except the challenge of the ops did not concede territory. And he handed Pax Geo's title to Marina Shafir. John Moxley entered the frame. I don't know, man. If we didn't just vacate this thing less than fucking 12 months ago for the exact same fucking
team that could have saved that division. Was saving that division so hard at the time that they had to drop it. And it happened to the fucking Gun Club at one point. It was so annoying.
That's what I'm saying. They had to vacate it because Juice got hurt. And we can't vacate it from this team. Huh. I like consistency. if this is what it is going forward,
I mean, Jay White had to lose, you know, for the world title in 4 months, so we couldn't do that, you know.
If this is what it is going forward, again, I like this. I think Freebird allows them to play much more in faction warfare. I just think that's fair. I think it, in general, it works much better. So, again, just feels like, you know, I like consistency. We, you know, it is what it is. Gates of Agony beat the fuck out of two motherfuckers.
But, like, if I'm MJF and I want to be Trios, why don't I just hire fucking the Gates of Agony to, like, I have two other partners and I hire the Gates of Agony to just go take you out in the parking lot. Then you vacate the title.
Yeah.
And now I can just literally anybody who, now maybe I have to face a tough team anyway, but I don't got to face you if I don't think I can beat you. So, like, what? Of course they have to institute this rule. I mean, I know some people will hate it.
I mean, look, if you really want to be toxic about this, you could also say, that it's clear favoritism against, you know, the guns. It's
tough because it's true. I mean,
they didn't get favored over the, you know, the big guys here, big stars.
I mean, why couldn't you have had Jay White defend that title and also still be a single star?
That's the thing. There is no fucking reason. And it was just to put it on Christian. And, you know, it is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
And that's if we wanted to look at it through a bit of a toxic lens, we could look at it like that. But I think it's just, maybe there's a mindset in changing booking philosophies, and I really hope that's what it is. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Gates of Agony, this, that, and the other. Lexi tried to talk to FTR as they were leaving. Matt and Angelo cut her off. They weren't going to allow FTR to trick Daniel into the same thing. Challenge him to a match. Said he's going to give him a taste.
A taste. Dude, they were, like, losing their shit during this promo. Bro was not ready to have a cordial conversation at all.
No. The five-tool player, the pride of pro wrestling, Anthony Bowens defeated Blake Christian.
Will he ever win?
Great stuff. Great stuff. Will he ever win? I love Anthony Bowens. Love him, love him, love him.
I mean, obviously,
Molly Wop rolling forearm for the victory. Megan Payne defeated a couple enhancement talent. Kevin Knight, big win, defeated A.R. Fox. Good for him. He's competing in the Best of Super Juniors in a couple weeks, as will Nick Wayne. He's getting more confident, and he hit the big dropkick, rolling DDT into the big springboard lariat for the victory. Gates of Agony said they don't mind getting hurt, called out the Hurt Syndicate, and said that they broke people.
Okay. Bishop Khan is good at promos. He came off weird to me in this. I don't know why. It just fell off.
It was a little, maybe a little rusty. I don't know. But I like these guys. You know, hey, let's get them in a big match here and see what they can do.
We've been advocates for these guys since they got lost in the vortex of the embassy for a while, you know.
Literally. FTR defeated Matt Menard and Cool Hand Ange, beat the living shit out of these guys. Undisputed Kingdom came out. Actually, it should say the Paragon came out. Ran off FTR to make sure they finally stayed away. So
it's funny, I haven't been calling them the Undisputed Kingdom because of the lack of Taven and Bennett for so long that I've just been referring to them as the Undisputed Boys, because they are the boys from the Undisputed Era, so...
Yeah.
Now, I'm glad they have a name now, because it's probably what everybody else has been doing, too. I mean, I've been doing that for months on the show now, because, like, I didn't know what to call them, you know, like...
Undisputed, da-da-da-da. We just had a couple quarterfinal matches to end the night here. Athena defeats Harley Cameron. Pretty good win for her. And then Mercedes was in a pre-tape. She skipped pathetic Springfield. Athena's only a speed bump. And the best woman went on Dynamite. Big matching coming with those two. And then we had an actual fucking war take place where Takeshita defeated Brody King. Holy shit. This was a fucking bruiserweight bull rush beatdown. Yeah, good shit here. Power drive knees for the victory. Takeshita beats him. And we get Takeshita versus Ospreay, motherfucker.
Match of the year.
Yeah, no kidding. Next week's Dynamite, guys, aka tonight or yesterday, whenever the hell
you're
listening to
this. We could literally go watch this right now if we had no fucking.
You might be watching Dynamite in 10 minutes. Owen Hart Foundation semifinal, Mercedes versus Athena. Athena, Ospreay versus Takeshita, Hangman Page versus Wildcard. My gut, it's the fucking easy pick. I'm thinking it's Jack Perry. You?
I'm still hoping for Josh Alexander sometime before like the halfway point
of
the year.
I'm in if it's him. I think it just feels like it's Jack Perry.
And if it is, I don't actually know if Hangman wins that match. You know what I mean? Like,
it could be very... No, Hangman's winning. Come on.
No, I mean, you can't debut somebody in a tournament and have them lose. Come on.
And then we got two title matches. Death Riders defending against the Ops and Hurt Syndicate defending against the Gates of Agony. So perhaps title change. Hopefully the Ops get some gold. I think the Ops are everything you want in the Trios division. Legends, young talent, bringing them up, doing your thing. Suzuki Goon, but, you know, Samoa Joe Goon. So, yeah, guys, that is it for us. We will be back next week with our normal programming. And then, yeah, you can catch us on ESC Fantasy if you're fans of The Last of Us or Daredevil Born Again. Or Andor.
Or and this one I'm excited else. About. Sunday, if we can pull it off. Fucking Sinners review.
Sinners, yep. Sinners, we'll have a review of Sinners. And yeah, so if you are interested in any of that, as always, ESE Fantasy in whatever podcast you're on. But if this is your first time listening to us, we usually do a lot longer form content, usually an hour longer than this. So check back next week. I promise you will... You will enjoy it because our schedule should be much better next week. That being said, everyone, thank you very much for checking this out. And we will catch you guys
next week. By the way, I remember your name is Charlie.
Oh, shit. That was so loud. I apologize,
people. I need to turn that down in the recording.
Oh, shit. That was good. Oh, shit. All right. Bye-bye. Yourself.